You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Halfway home on this final Monday of April. Hope your draft weekend went well. Thanks for starting your week off with us. Miller and Moulton, MillerandMoulton.com, Miller_Moulton on X. Man, has he been busy. We're hitting him up right before he takes a much-needed break. Ian Cummings, draft analyst, Pro Football Network, ProFootballNetwork.com. Follow Ian on X at IC for Ian Cummings, IC_draft, IC_draft. Ian, David, and Mark. So how'd the draft go in your estimation? Were there a lot of surprises? Did you find yourself shaking your head? Or what'd you think?
It was fun, you know, as it always is. There were a few surprises in round one. I think that's where most of the bigger ones occur because, you know, once you get to round three and round four, there are 32 different teams with 32 very different draft boards, so you can expect more variance at that point, right? So you kind of understand that some picks aren't going to go according to your board or someone else's board, right? But round one, we had a few surprises, particularly the QBs. I mean, 12, six of them in the top 12, that really surprised me. I didn't expect that. Michael Penix Jr. going eighth was pretty shocking as well. So I think a lot of the surprises that we saw later on precipitated from that. But by and large, I thought a lot of teams had very good classes. There weren't too many that I could really criticize.
All right. If you were to criticize, would you start with Atlanta, or do you look at this and say, hey, a couple of years from now, this could end up being a really smart pick?
I mean, it could, right? You know, I'd probably start with them. Just, I'm not a tough grader. You know, I like to try and look at the rationale for everything. But with Atlanta, I just, you know, to me, not only was it a slight reach on my board, Penix was my 33rd overall player. So it wasn't the same kind of reach like Kenny Pickett in 2022, right? You know, like Penix had fringe first-round ability. So it wasn't that particularly. For me, it's that I don't think he really fit the timeline for the Falcons, right? They just signed Kirk Cousins to a massive deal, right? So at least 3 years, that's your window with Cousins, I felt like. And you had an opportunity at number eight overall to pick a player who could help you win now with Cousins. Rome Odunze was right there. Dallas Turner, Latu, if you want that defensive player, right? And instead, they picked a quarterback who, if everything goes according to plan with Cousins, right, he's coming back from the torn Achilles. So there is that uncertainty there. So it is smart to hedge for that in a sense, but if everything goes according to plan and you just invested a ton of money in Cousins, if he plays that three-year window, Michael Penix Jr. isn't even hitting the field until he's 27 years old. And then you don't even have that rookie contract boost to, you know, give you roster flexibility. So I don't think it matched up with the timeline at all. I think it's a move that prevents them from maximizing their roster right now. And they passed up blue chip talent. So, you know, I can understand some of the rationale for it, but I think it just didn't fit the timeline. That could put them in a tough spot later on.
Did you like what the Bears did? And we had been making this point for weeks that, hey, if you're all in on a young quarterback with pick nine, make sure it's somebody who can help your young quarterback, and they get Odunze, the wide receiver from Washington.
Yeah, I loved what they did. I gave their draft an A+, even though they didn't have a ton of capital, right? You get Caleb Williams, who's that franchise QB, and they're in a very good situation right now. The offensive line is pretty much set. The defense is very good under Matt Eberflus, and then now you got Rome Odunze alongside Keenan Allen and DJ Moore. You know, the Bears are notorious for not having a very good wide receiver history. I think that's about to change. I think this receiver unit is one of the best that we've seen, just on paper, right? You need to see it materialize, but a lot of talent there, man. And then in round three, they got Kieran Amagaji, very good depth tackle guard. You know, they had a void of punter, which they filled on day three. Can't fault them for that. But then they traded back into the draft and got Austin Booker, who could be some needed help at edge. He needs to fill out his frame, but he's very explosive, agile, got good bend, good length. So all the tools to be another component opposite Montez Sweat. So I thought they did a really nice job all through the draft. But in round one, you know, getting Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze, that's a player duo that can reshape your offense right there. That's a player duo that can, you know, create some fireworks. So I thought they did everything they needed to do. I think they're pretty much, you know, they're set to make some noise in the NFC North this year.
Ian, take a look at the Tampa Bay Bucs and tell me what you think. I loved Barton. It was the guy I had picked for them. But after that, how did you assess the Bucs draft?
Yeah, well, first off, Barton's a great player. He's a top 25 guy for me. So getting into 26 was good value for sure. I think he can be a really solid starter. Reminds me, just his body type and his athleticism, reminds me a little bit of Alex Mack, who was a really good starter at center for a long time. So I think he'll be a very good player. Chris Braswell was a player that I had circled as a team fit for them in round two. So I was a big fan of that pick as well. I think he's explosive. He's got great speed to power. He's got pretty good hands for his age, too. So I think he's a guy who can at least raise your floor with that unit, which we know Joe Tryon, Shoyinka, right, hasn't always, you know, kind of materialized his development, right? Yaya Diaby was good in his rookie year, more of a speed guy, so speed to power guy who might not have that nuanced arsenal quite yet. So Chris Braswell adds a little bit of what they needed. Tyke Smith is a tone setter, a little bit rich for me, but I can see it in late round three because he's a physical player, he's versatile, he can play the slot, he can play safety as well. So I liked it for sure. Jalen McMillan was a steal at that point. I love his ability to be that wide receiver three. I think once he's healthy, you know, we'll see the speed, the route running chops that he has, the strong hands over the middle. I think he can be a really good player, and especially with Chris Godwin being a free agent next year. I think he really gives you security and upside in the short term. Bucky Irving, great change of pace back. I think he plays bigger than his size. He's not the elite athlete testing-wise, but you can see the change of direction, the short area agility on film. I think he can be a big-time spark plug to this offense. And then those last two picks, Elijah Klein, just a physical guard, not an elite athlete, but again, people mover, you know, like just Mike likes on the interior. And then Devin Culp, a speed guy, tight end, who's got some utility, a special teamer, and some H-back roles too. So overall, it was a solid class. You know, there wasn't a ton of capital to go around, but getting McMillan in round three, Braswell in round two, and some, you know, quality value assets on day three, I liked what they did for sure.
The Jags, I mean, you know, the joke afterwards is that basically they just scouted LSU and took players from there. But let me tell you something, you could do worse than drafting a bunch of guys from LSU. But getting Brian Thomas, they trade down in the first round and still get the fourth best receiver on most teams' boards. Your quick thoughts on the Jags draft?
Yeah, I liked what they did. I think they were swinging for upside a little more, you know, which I can understand. And Trent Baalke likes to do that, but I guess you can always expect that. Brian Thomas Jr. fits the offense very well. I think he'd be a really solid movement speed with that vertical speed. He fits Trevor Lawrence's style as well. Mason Smith was a little early for me. I think he really banked on the tools there, but if it can work out, he could be a really solid, versatile piece for you on the defensive line. Jerrion Jones is physical, explosive, and at the nickel spot, I really like his ability there. I don't know if he's as good on the boundary. He doesn't have the longest frame, but we'll see how that translates. And then Jordan Jefferson on day three was a good pick. I thought a few of their day three picks were pretty solid, but overall, that first three, that's for the Jaguars team that's starting to try and get back into contention, right? You want to really hit on those first three picks. So Brian Thomas Jr., in my opinion, could be a hit. I really like the ability there. Mason Smith, Jerrion Jones, a little less sure there, but in specific roles, I think they can fit with the personnel I was working with.
Ian Cummings, Pro Football Network, NFL Draft Analyst. Follow him on X at IC for Ian Cummings underscore draft, IC underscore draft.
And then finally, the Florida teams, Miami, they go Chop Robinson with their first pick. They get Patrick Paul, who's a versatile tackle and with some upside, but they needed guard help, and it didn't seem like they went in center help. It didn't seem like they really drafted for need. How are they overall, in your opinion, Ian?
Yeah, guard is still a question. Interior, they did sign Aaron Brewer in free agency, so I think he'll play the center spot. But I wanted them to address guard. That was one position I wanted them to hit, and they didn't. So slight knock for me there. But and Patrick Paul, to me, I think he still needs a little more development. So if he plays in year one, that's not optimal. You know, I want to give him some time to sit and refine his technique. But Chop Robinson is a spark plug in the edge rotation. His speed and power, his first step is instant. He teleports off the line. And then Mo Kamara on day three was another edge guy that they got that I like a lot. I think he's a very nuanced pass rusher. More of a gun guy who's a little undersized, but can be a very good player for them. Malik Washington, who they got in round six, I think that's your wide receiver three, honestly. He was such a good player at Virginia. Very nuanced route runner, explosive, twitched up, and rocks up rack threat too. So Malik Washington was the top 75 prospect for me, and they got him in round six. So I couldn't be happier about that scheme fit and that value for them. They got Taj Washington from USC as well, who's also a good player. So overall, I thought they did a good job. I would have liked them to address the interior offensive line, but you know, maybe they'll be able to kick the tires on a free agent that's still, you know, still out there.
Was this just a fluke draft in that six quarterbacks in the top 12? I mean, we hadn't had six quarterbacks in the first round since 83. But also, I mean, Ian, first 14 players were offense. I mean, when you're big board, how many defensive players did you have in your top 14?
Yeah, so I had, I want to say two or three. I think it was three. It was Terry Arnold from Alabama. Then it was Dallas Turner from Alabama and Johnny Newton from Illinois, who fell because of some medical concerns in the round two. So, you know, I think the class was a little bit skewed toward offense in the blue chip talent range. I mean, obviously those three quarterbacks, right, and JJ at 10 as well. The big three at wide receiver, those take up some space in the top 10 as well. And then Joe Alt, JC Latham, Olu Fashanu, Troy Pasano. I mean, this class was pretty heavily thoughts on the offense side of the ball. And I think there was a disproportionate skew in that direction. At the same time, I didn't expect it to go all the way to 15. I thought someone would be taken. I thought the Falcons were a sure bet to potentially get that premier edge rusher that they really need in that defense. But then they picked Penix, so kind of threw a wrench in that. But I do think the class was weighed in the offensive side. At the same time, maybe we're seeing a shift where NFL teams are starting to value offensive talent a little bit more because the modern NFL is all about outscoring the other opponent, like creating, right? Making sure that you stay ahead, you know, get the lead and keep the lead, right? So, you know, the value that we see in that, you know, defense will always have a presence. But this class, you know, it was just, I think it was predicated to be a run offense, really, because of the talent that was there.
Ian, who are your top three? Who are the top three teams in your opinion in the draft? We went through the Florida teams pretty closely, but who do you think were the best three draft teams this year?
Chicago was up there, and I know they didn't have a ton of capital, but they got an A-plus for me. Loved what they did. The Washington Commanders, I thought, did a phenomenal job. I thought Jaden Daniels, I would have taken Drake May there personally, but I can see the scheme fit with Jaden Daniels. I think he's got a lot of potential, and I think they got a ton of great value fits later on. Johnny Newton. They got Ben Sinnott, a tight end, who's one of my favorite prospects in the draft, too. So that was a fun one. And then, honestly, Pittsburgh did a really nice job getting Troy Fitzgerald at left tackle, Zach Frazier at center as well. And then they also got, I believe, Roman Wilson at wide receiver. It was a great scheme fit. I loved his ability. He's got some Chris Olave to him with the way he can separate with that speed and bend. The Bengals did a nice job, too. I remember they got Jermaine Burton in round three. If he can stay consistent off the field, he can be a very good player as well. So a lot of teams did a great job. You know, I could keep rattling off names, but I think those few are the first ones to come. And also the Lions getting Terry Arnold at 24. That was phenomenal value. So I could keep going, but overall, I thought it was a good year.
All right, got about 30 seconds. The Bills, very interesting. They trade down twice to two teams who take a wide receiver, Xavier Worthy, Xavier Leggett, and then they go Keon Coleman at 33, a wide receiver. Do you think they made the right move?
I think he fits the offense very well. I think his alpha ability at the catch point really fits with Josh Allen's and Dude, but you can also see him opportunities as a big slot rack weapon early on. So I like the fit, want to see it materialize, but I think exactly what they needed in that offensive trio, size, alpha ability, they got it with Coleman.
Ian Cummings, draft expert, Pro Football Network, profootballnetwork.com, PFN 365 on X. Follow Ian on X, IC. _draft. Ian, thanks so much. Take a vacation, yes. Will you?
I will. I promise. Thank you guys for having me.
Ian Cummings, who was great to us in the lead up and through the draft. Pro Football Network, profootballnetwork.com.
I was going to get to his 2025 mock, but we ran out of time.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness. It's bad enough you actually read one. That's like when Pat Kerwin votes on a top 25 in the NFL.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
21 minutes past the hour. Miller and Moulton, millerandmoulton.com, Miller_Moulton on X. Aaron Freeman covers the Falcons. He'll join us coming up in a little more than 15 minutes time. Find out what the folks in Atlanta covering the team and fans of the team think about the whole. Let's take Penix at 8. Brilliance or idiocy? Because I don't know if you can have a thought in between, Mark.
You know, the one point that Ian just made is Penix's age. He was the oldest quarterback taken.
And now we'll wait 2 more years. I hear you. I know. Listen, if he can play, and particularly if Cousins gets hurt again, and he has to step in either in 24 or 25, and he can play, then they look brilliant. But if he's not going to hit the field much before 26, and then he's got to hit it running, man, in this day and age. You know, like Aaron Rodgers, after sitting 3 years, he wasn't terrific his first year. And the Packers went 6-10, I believe. Now, after that, made the playoffs, and then his third year as a starter won the Super Bowl. And we all know the run they had after that and the success they had, even though they didn't win the final game of the year or even get to the final game of the year. Won a lot of games without getting to the final game of the year.
But, you know, Penix in this day and age, you know, if he's okay and they go 6-10 with him in 2026, do we think any of the people involved in drafting him and coaching him are still going to be drafting and coaching him? Not unless Cousins tears it up these next 2 years and they do so well that they're allowed to have a mulligan. But then it, of course, will beg the question, why the hell did we get rid of him to have a mulligan?
Yeah, the other side of this goes 2 years and goes reasonably well with Cousins and Penix steps in. You could have a regime that stays in Atlanta for the next decade.
You could. Yeah, you could. And supposedly that's what the owner wanted. Didn't want to have how it ended with Matt Ryan and have no plan and all that.
Certainly didn't look that way the way he walked into the draft room.
I know. He walked in and it was as if his face said, you know, I didn't sign Belichick, right? And this is how you guys repay me?
Speaking of owners just walking in.
Uh-huh.
Did you see the story of the Carolina Panthers owner? Who made a stop.
He did.
At, what's the name? I got to find the name of the place here. A bar in Charlotte.
On the way to the draft,
on
right?
The way to the draft.
To the team headquarters, heading to the draft. He's driving on the road, and there's a bar, and they've got one of those bars. They got one of those signs.
The Dilworth Neighborhood Grill had a message. Please
like
let
a nice
the
friendly joint.
Yeah, it does. The Neighborhood Grill. What can be more friendly than that?
Right.
And they are one of those places. We have one not too far from here, David. There is a place when you're driving on US 41, as I'm in Southwest Florida, that they are very fun with their signs. This place seems to have a similar sense of humor because the Dilworth Neighborhood Grill had a message for the Carolina Panthers owner.
Right.
Simply out front said, please let the coach and GM pick this year.
Translation, we know you own the team and you apparently did the picking last year. We don't like your picks.
Well, David Tepper, the owner of the Panthers, drove past it, saw it, and stopped in the bar.
He did. And there's two ways he could have done this. He could have had fun with it. Does it look like he had fun with it?
Everybody said he was good. Everybody said he was fine when he was in. But he did one thing that I thought kind of crossed the line. He didn't like the manager of the establishment's hat, which was apparently a Philadelphia Eagles hat. And he took the hat off of the manager's head, reached out and grabbed another man's hat. Now, I don't wear hats because, David, as I've said many times on this show, I run hot.
Right.
I like hats. I've got no issue with those who wear hats. Even Trent every day with his hat on backwards. But you're not a hat wearer, so this is tough. You and I don't wear hats.
Well, that's only because I'm not anti-hat. It's just that I have a big melon. All right, it's tough to find hats that fit the melon, never mind look good on the melon.
The only hat you could really go with is a big cowboy hat. You'd look fabulous in a cowboy hat.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
I've never had a cowboy hat in which I'm like, oh, that'd be interesting. It just feels like it literally is balanced on top of my head. It never feels like it comes down the side of my head. It feels like, you know, when you don't, did you ever take aluminum foil and you end up tearing a piece that's not big enough. Okay. And yet you're trying to, you don't have any more foil. This is it. You got to make it work. And it's not quite, that's what I feel like every hat feels like on my head.
That crust always pops through, doesn't it? That pizza crust always pops through that aluminum foil. You got two of them flipped on top of one another. You're trying to work that aluminum foil. And then all of a sudden, damn it.
Right.
You poked a hole in it.
Right, it goes around two-thirds of the plate, fine. The other third, air's getting in, it's drying it out, the whole deal, it's a waste of time. It's kind of how every hat feels on my melon.
So, Trent, let me ask you, because you are the hat wearer among us. If someone that you didn't know, you're the manager of this restaurant, and you are wearing your Detroit Lions hat because that's your team. And the owner of the Carolina Panthers comes in, wants to know who did the sign. You're like, the owner did the sign. Is he here? No, he's gone for the day. And he reaches over and tries to grab your hat. Now, you're a really nice young man. Would you let him grab your hat, or would you have tried to slap his hand away?
I would probably initially try to slap the hand away.
Because that, to me, is instinct.
Yes.
Someone goes, what are you
right,
doing?
Like, get away from me.
Get away from me.
Don't touch my hat.
The manager took it in stride. I don't know. He really did.
I know. You know, the old rule, you know, customer's always right. Rule number two, if the customer's wrong, revert back to rule number one. Right. He was treating him the way you're supposed to if you're, you know, part of the staff.
Right. So he should have thrown a drink on Tupper just to get him back for throwing the drink on the people in Jacksonville. Right. Wasn't that where he threw the drink?
Absolutely. Yes. Well, if he was a Jags fan, maybe he would. Walked in and said, sir, hold on one second. Grab some water and just throw it at him. Okay, now we're even. What's the point you want to make? Right.
So I don't know if the Panthers owner is doing well in the old how to win friends and influence people department, David.
No, he got scathing columns written about him for what he did, even though the staff there said, no, actually, he was pretty polite, took it in stride. You know, I'm wondering if the owner who did it, if he would have, like, taken a picture with him. That's what I thought he should have done. I thought he should have had a ball with it. In fact, he should have gotten out a phone, recorded some sort of video, and said, well, listen, since you think I screwed it up last year, who do you think we should take? And then, like, put that on the team site. Of course, they didn't have a first-round pick, so... Well, they did trade back into the last pick of the first round, take the kid from South Carolina.
I will say the owner of the bar has been a season ticket holder since 1995. I think he can put on a sign whatever he damn well pleases.
I agree.
And his restaurant business will benefit greatly from Tepper stopping and from this story. So he wins out of this deal. His sign wins, he wins. Tepper's the loser.
I think Tepper should go back. I think you should call him up and say, hey, tell me what day you're going to be there. I think Tepper should go back. I think you should eat a meal there.
And have a beer with the owner. Absolutely.
Totally. And then ask him, hey, what'd you think of our draft? I followed your advice, you know, whether he did or not. What'd you think of our draft? Aaron Freeman, what do you think of the Falcons draft? Next.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton. Only on the Florida Sports Network.
Minutes till the top of the hour. Miller and Moulton, MillerandMoulton.com, Miller_Moulton on X. He hosts the Locked On Falcons podcast. He is Aaron Freeman. You can, well, follow him and the podcast at Locked On Falcons. Locked On Falcons. Aaron, it's David and Mark. Thanks for doing this. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. Glad to be talking football with you.
Absolutely. All right. The reason we reached out to you was we just kind of wanted to wet the finger, hold it up in the air, and first have you tell us, so how has the Penix pick gone over now that everyone's had 72 hours to let it marinate?
I think it's about the same as what it was Thursday night. I think you have mixed opinions on it still at this point, but I think as often is the case with the draft, you go into it thinking it's going to go a certain way and then reality hits. And I think, you know, people are making peace with the reality that the Falcons have their hopefully long-term quarterback of the future.
What was your initial reaction, Aaron? When you're watching the draft, Michael Penix Jr. gets taken by the Falcons. What was your initial reaction?
I was very shocked. I actually had done a podcast the day before on Locked On Falcons saying there was a 0% chance that the Falcons would take a quarterback at 8, just because no team in NFL history really has taken a quarterback that high with the intention of sitting him for multiple seasons. And so I figured, you know, the Falcons won't be the trendsetters here. And, of course, that got completely thrown out the window Thursday night. But, yeah, it was utter shock that the Falcons went in that direction.
If they had followed it up with either a second or the one of their two third-round picks with maybe addressing, I don't know, I think some of the needs that Falcons fans really wanted them to address. Would this pick be going over better? Because, I mean, they didn't take a corner in this draft, did they?
No, they did not. They didn't add any secondary help. They did address their pass rush. They did draft four different defensive linemen in the draft. So I think they did attack one of their major needs, but yeah, there were some questions in the secondary. I think a lot of people expected them to add another weapon on offense at the wide receiver position. They did draft a wide receiver in the sixth round, but that player is probably going to be more of a special teams player in Casey Washington out of Illinois, as opposed to someone who's likely going to impact on offense. So I think a lot of people thought the Falcons would really focus on a number of positions going into this draft, and they really just kind of focus on the quarterback and the pass rush.
Is there a day three guy that made you jump up and down and go, all right, this is a guy that maybe we got to steal on?
Yeah, I think the fourth round selection in Brandon Dorlus out of Oregon. He's a player that has inside-outside versatility. He's played all across the defensive line the last couple of years up in Oregon, and I think the Falcons really like his pass rush potential rushing from the interior, but head coach Raheem Morris said that they would, you know, try to use him in a multitude of different positions like he did at Oregon to try to maximize his pass rush, and I think he's a player that could be a big, impactful player a couple of years down the road.
Aaron Freeman, he hosts Locked On Falcons. Follow him and it on X at Locked On Falcons. Talking the Falcons, obviously the most controversial pick, taking Penix, eighth overall in the first round, and then also the rest of their draft. Aaron, when you look at your team on paper, you know, we were prepared to pick the Falcons to win the NFC South. In fact, we had said so before the draft. We think the Bucs, though, had a good draft, and they are the three-time defending division champs. We actually think the Saints had a good draft. Curious what you think of the Falcons on paper in that division today.
Yeah, I think it's a similar conversation that we were having last year where, you know, I think a lot of people thought it was kind of a toss-up division. I think the Saints were probably getting most of the love going into the season just because they had the most proven quarterback in Derek Carr. I do like the Bucs draft this year. I think they are still the front runners just because, you know, until you beat the champs, you know, you can't call yourself the champs. But I think the Falcons are right there in the mix. I think they probably could use a few more upgrades. Some of them are the positions that we already talked about that they're not addressing in the draft to make me feel a lot better about considering them the favorites. I know they're kind of the betting favorites, but I think right now I think the Bucs are kind of 1A and the Falcons maybe 1B at this point when it comes to division race.
Is there anybody else in free agency in any areas you expect them now what they didn't get in the draft for them to address? I mean, is there someone out there that you think, you know, I mean, the Cowboys went and signed Zeke today. Is there someone that the Falcons need to go sign in free agency?
I would love to see the team upgrade one of their starting secondary positions at corner or safety. I think there's a lot of good safeties left out there. I think there are a couple of good corners. No immediate name, sort of, you know, I think Justin Simmons is probably the biggest name out there if the Falcons want to try to link up with him for 1 or 2 years or something like that. But yeah, I think, you know, those are some areas where I could definitely see the Falcons trying to address between now and training camp.
Aaron, thanks for doing this, particularly at this hour. We really appreciate it. Continued success with the Locked On Falcons podcast, and hopefully we can talk again around training camp.
Absolutely.
Aaron Freeman, Locked On Falcons is the podcast. Locked On Falcons. Follow him and it on X at Locked On Falcons. So, you know, what's that line from Birdcage? How are you feeling? Betrayed? Bewildered? Is that Falcons fan still 3 days after Penix? Is Dan Orlovsky the only guy who had a night's sleep and came around on this pick?
It seems that way. And you, a little more than I, were Falcons are going to win the division. I still think the Bucs are right there.
I know you do.
I just don't know when you need defense. When you make a pick like that, you're going to have to be really accurate with your other picks. Kid from Clemson better be able to come play now. Not a lot of wiggle room when you make the Penix draft. That's the problem for me, David.
Yeah, to me, they needed a third wide receiver. They needed a corner, and they needed a D lineman. And I thought they were going to go D lineman, eighth overall, and then they were going to take best player on the board between wide receiver and corner. You know, I mean, they could have, I think, had Cooper DeJean there. I think they could have in the second round. I think they were picking now. They may have moved around, you know, but at least based on where they were drafting in the first round, they were ahead of both Green Bay and Philadelphia traded up. I mean, I was surprised they didn't address, because they've had three down seasons in a row here. You know, the whole, you know, be patient. No, you don't sign a 35-year-old quarterback and give him $100 million guaranteed. You're not into patience right now. You got an 81-year-old owner. I mean, you know, that day's come and gone. It's time to win this division. And Tampa Bay's made the playoffs four straight years and won the division three straight years. I mean, it's time for the Saints and the Falcons to, you know, stand up here. So I was surprised, but clearly, make no bones about it, they have said they think he's a star. They think he was, you know, second in, apparently in the room, he was the second or third best quarterback in the draft, according to the Falcons' room. And they weren't passing on him. And once again, Mark, like, you know, the Giants at six and other, the Falcons are thinking, we ain't drafting eighth again. We're good. We're going to win games with Cousins. We're a good team. We ain't going to be in position to get a quarterback anytime soon. So let's get him now.
A lot of after-the-fact Giants talk that they tried to move up to three. It tells you what they thought of J.J. McCarthy, by the way. I mean,
yes, absolutely, because they could have, you know, hung out and had him at six. But, yeah, apparently the Giants were offering this year's one and next year's one to move up three spots. The Patriots said, no, I'm good. What I thought was interesting, I think it was Tom Curran of NBC Sports Boston, who said the fact that Joe Shane and Brian Daboll wanted Drake May solidified them that they were making the right choice in taking Drake May. So it's interesting the regard in that room that the Patriots at least have for those two decision makers with the Giants. Just funny, because I don't think Giants fans have that much confidence in the decision makers with the Giants, but that's a whole other story.
Always Minnesota, look good. Always look good somewhere else, David.
Minnesota offered 11-23 and next year's one to move up to three for Drake May, and the Patriots said no. So that's also out there going forward. You know, if you're a Patriots fan, if May obviously is the answer, then, you know, there's no amount of picks you could have offered. But if May is not the answer, you start going, 11-23 and next year's one, huh? Have you seen, by the way, the Vikings draft next year? Unless they made a deal Saturday to acquire future picks next year. Going into Saturday, the Vikings had a 1 and 2 5s next year, and that was it. I don't know if they somehow, some way added to that. I don't know if they think they're going to get a supplemental pick for losing somebody. But right now, I mean, when the draft ended Friday night, the Vikings 2025 draft was a first round pick and 2 5s. Wow. And I'm into trading picks and all, but that's... And hold on a second. Are you guys the worst team in your division also? See, it's one thing when the Rams were sacrificing all those picks. What were the Rams doing?
Well, they were playing deep into January is what they were doing, David.
Right. I mean, you're a Vikings fan. You're like, wait a minute. Hold on a second. What's our draft next year? Hey, right now, blank piece of paper and a pen. Whether you're, and Trent, chime in here, okay? Right now, you got to pick that division. Where are you picking Minnesota?
Fourth.
Got to be fourth.
And it's funny because,
I mean,
Well, I mean, it's them or Chicago.
Well, and they got the best player in the division in Justin Jefferson. That's the ironic thing.
But if you think Caleb Williams is the, I mean, there are people now who are going to pick the Bears to win 10 or more games. What'd they win last year? Seven?
Seven.
And they look at them now and go, oh, they're a hell of a lot
And look what
now.
They've added.
Right.
Added the running back, added the receiver, drafted the quarterback. I mean, they are.
I mean, you guys know I'm high on Williams. I think the Bears are going to finish second in the division. I think they're going to have a better season than the Packers.
Oof. Their roster is not better than Green Bay.
No. And Green Bay's younger, too, so in theory, a lot of those players could make it leap.
Green Bay's roster's deeper, but that doesn't mean that Chicago can't be better. But that's a bold pick. Picking them to leapfrog the Packers, who finished two wins ahead of them and won a playoff game last year.
Don't they first have to beat the Packers in order to pick them ahead of the Packers, everyone? I mean, can we start with that basic premise? Just how about the Bears beat the Packers before we talk about the Bears finishing ahead of the Packers? Because they can't beat the Packers.
You know, that is true. If Caleb Williams can beat the Packers once.
Bears fans got the right guy here.
Exactly. His first 2-3 years in the league, if he goes 2-2 or 3-3 against the Packers, Bears fans would be like, we'll take that. We will.
Yeah, if he beats the Packers and Lambeau one time, he can run over to the where they do the Lambeau leap and scream, I own you, like Rodgers did all those Bears fans. I still own you.
Let's just say, by the way, that both teams in that division hit on their quarterbacks. Is that going to be the best division in the NFC here soon?
What division is?
West.
Well, right now, I would argue the West. Because Seattle's the third best team in the division, and they've had back-to-back 9-win seasons. The Rams are a 10-win team who had a really good draft and are probably going to be better, even though they lost Aaron Donald.
Aging Stafford, Aaron Donald gone. I'm not convinced that the Rams are going to be better.
Okay. So I would argue best division top to bottom in the NFC, much weaker conference, is the West.
It's and really close because you got Arizona at the bottom of that division, which
I
is
know,
not a good
but
roster.
Arizona just had 37 draft picks and signed a couple guys. I mean, they're not going to stay terrible for much longer.
But David, to your
Kyler Murray still the quarterback there?
As a matter of fact, he is.
Okay. I'm just checking. I might have missed something over the weekend. Maybe they got a new quarterback there.
You're doing more than checking. Come on now, be honest. You're doing more than checking. Just, you're doubling down is what you're doing.
Just saying.
But if Love and Williams are the real deal, we might change that tune by week 6.
Well, Love, Williams, and McCarthy. I mean, I'm just saying. They got three young quarterbacks, and the guy in Detroit's gone to two conference championship games. Miller and Moulton.